I played drums to Riders on the Storm this morning.
Riders on the Storm.
And it was fun to play to.
I'm trying to think about the drums on that.
It's like the ding, 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 ding.
It's just kind of like jazzy.
Yeah, but it's got some nice little breaks. It's like 7 minutes long, yeah. So you can start. You know, when I play to a song like that, I'm not like, oh, I got to do this verbatim or else, you know, John Densmore will be pissed. You know, in those open spaces of 3 minutes when they're basically doing the same shit, you know, I'll jazz it up for my own entertainment, you know.
Add those fills that we're missing.
Yeah, a little jazz. That's why it's practice. I'm, you know, trying to push myself a little bit and learn some new tricks.
So what, do you just put in some earbuds and like go for it?
I do. Actually, I use my, you know, I had a pretty awful experience where I, you know, one of my inner ear monitors was busted. And when I start cranking one side and the other one is busted, like I do start like, I just feel off balance. Like right. One side is kind of getting fucked up. So I started just using regular Apple earbuds and my kids like headphones that I had downstairs just randomly and put it over. And right. I'm like, oh, this sounds pretty good. Like I can't hear much outside. But of course, like I'm like pressing my ears and these earbuds in there to a great point that I got this like weird cyst pocket behind my ear. When I tell you, I was like, I was considering going to the hospital after I popped this. Cause I'm like, if that much just came out of my head, like, do I need any of that? Do I need some of this? Did I lose too much? This is bad. So, now
I've learned my lesson.
I'm back to just inner ear monitors, yeah, which, you know, as long as they're nice and sealed, you know.
So you had the earbuds in with headphones over them just to hold them on?
No, to seal the noise, because if you have Apple earbuds in, the drums are too loud.
If
you don't have like noise canceling something. So that's why the inner ears are perfect now that they're fixed and I have a new pair. So I'm back to that. But speaking of gross things, before we got on, I see a story about people studying dinosaur poop and how fossilized poop is actually teaching us so much about the dinosaurs and what they ate and how they lived. I know you grew up in a house with like dinosaur bones and stuff. Did you guys, was there any fossilized dinosaur poop laying around?
I know that it's well studied. And in fact, my dad definitely had many joke fossilized poops. I don't know if he actually had any real fossilized
poop. Wait, what do you mean joke poop? Joke like, fossilized
he
poop?
He would find a rock, you know, that it looked like, that you could say was a poop, and he would.
Oh, okay, okay.
He would save it, but
is this a joke? Like you and your father, you'd be walking around, and he would find a rock, and then say, "This is like rhinoceros poop."
Or more or like, I might find the rock and be like, "Hey, Dad, is this fossilized poop? It looks like."
Yeah, I need egg you on.
I said, "Sure, yeah."
Oh, that's cute.
I think it is. In more recently aged poo, he always talked about how, you know, you could track species or tell what was in the area if you knew your poop. And he wanted to write a book called Feces of the Species.
Right. Feces. Oh my God. You shouldn't have even said that on air. That's too good. Someone else is going to take it.
He's not going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, and I guess the guy that the main dude in Jurassic Park was made after was actually a real archaeologist who apparently had groundbreaking stuff on poop and how to investigate poop. So that scene in Jurassic Park when he just jumps out and just goes like, you know, oh no, she goes hand first into the poop. Well, never mind. This is a non sequitur.
Dude, the first place that every archaeologist hits, no matter what era you're looking at, is the fucking outhouses.
Oh,
because
right.
That's where everything gets thrown into when it breaks. So, you know, like people might come through and then leave with their possessions, but anything that's like broken while they're there goes into the outhouse. So
is that right? So if you were to study like a nomadic group of people that stayed somewhere for like 1 month, you would go immediately to their leftovers, let's
their
say.
Their poop pit.
Yeah, wow. That makes total sense, but just something I never thought about.
There you go.
Look at that. You learned something new. This is the upside to you having a scientist dad, you know?
You learn new shit every day.
I hope Tom listens to this, you know? I don't know if Tom's listening. You know, you wonder if guitar players listen to their drummer's podcast. I doubt it, you know?
Yeah, he might hear enough of him on the bus. Yeah.
What do you mean? You should hang on every word a drummer says. It's wisdom. You know, remember, we hold a wisdom that you could not possibly possess. You know,
the wisdom of the
I had a question in this on like a let's talk shit about guitar players kind of segment of the podcast.
Yeah.
But
why didn't you do that?
But you know why I didn't? Because I'm like 10 minutes in this interview and I remember like how nice Joe is.
Oh, yeah.
And how like that would not be a meaty segment because he just wouldn't talk enough shit. It wouldn't, you know. I was like, he'll be too nice about it. So I'm not even going to go down that line of questioning. But that being said, Joe, one of the ultimate nice guys of nice guys. Always a pleasure to be around and talk to. Great drummer. He's like one of those perfect, I put Joe in that school of great, like, you know, Zach Lynn, like Jimmy World and Menzingers, where like the drums just like drive the band in a lot of different ways. And he's like a very forward moving driver, nice. You know? So like, just the way Joe plays, like has always propelled this band in like really solid, fucking really, honestly, rock solid kind of way. And you know, you just watch him get better over the years. So it's you know, one of those people and bands we've had Menzingers on before.
Yep.
Easy group to root for, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, even when you hear still after all these years, like, I think 8 records and, you know, going to high school together and just like how they're still the way they collaborate, the way they share ideas and how obviously everybody feels heard and nobody feels put out. And it's this open thing like, man,
yeah.
I've said it before, but it's impressive. And it's like it to be able to hold on to that. It takes adults, you know what I mean? It takes like grown up people who can manage their emotions and who are cognizant of other people's emotions. It's like a whole soup recipe that's super hard to get. And I just wanted to be noted when you find it. The Menzingers are one of the greats of interband dynamics. Like I really think, I don't know, maybe it will do the study, Brad. Who wants to give us a grant?
There's a whole major there. Not just a class, but a major.
Someone give us a grant.
Major in Menzinger.
This is intro to Menzinger's dynamics. Something like that. 101. I think we should have it.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a great catch up. Let's start. Play the train, please.
It's going on
track! You know, it makes it seem like you're settling.
No.
When you tell Joe it's good.
I would like you to go into a professional recording studio.
Yeah. I'm in Tulsa, so I'll do my best, but I don't know what they
got any hookups there, Brad?
I'm aware. In Tulsa?
Got any hookups in Tulsa for a podcast studio?
I did book a recording studio for a podcast recently in Tulsa, believe it or not.
Is that right?
It was there's an awesome studio in Tulsa.
I thought I was just hazing you with that question.
No, it's called The Church.
You got receipts. Good for you.
There's a really sick studio called The Church. I would recommend if you want to go do some recording. Nice people.
Well, if I knew you had these kinds of tentacles in the industry, I would have tried to set something up beforehand. But we got to settle for, where are you, Joe? Are you in like a Marriott Bonvoy, a Super 8? What are you looking at right now?
Yeah, I'm in, it's actually a hotel called the Mayo.
Ooh, what's this? That sounds
good. I don't know, but it's super nice. It's like,
oh, you're in like a boutique hotel.
Yeah.
Kind of. I think it might be like kind of a Marriott offshoot type situation. But yeah, it's downtown. It's a super old building.
One of the we're Marriott, but we're not Marriott ones.
Exactly. Like the Wi-Fi shows up as Marriott, I think. That's like what I'm on. But otherwise there's no signs of like the corporate aspect, I guess. Yeah.
Is there like a ping pong table or a pool table in the main lounge?
No. So I know what you're saying. It's not like that kind of like where you can rent a bike or something in the lobby.
Right. Yeah. Many leather-bound books that are never read, like those ones. Yeah.
You're not sure if you're in a hostel or or a hotel kind of thing. No, it's kind of like, it looks like an old bank or something down there. You know, like those kind of old buildings that they repurpose for like, it's cool.
And you're right downtown?
Nice. Yeah. I literally got off the bus and walked into the room, so I don't really know where I am, but it seems to be some kind of business district.
It's seemingly downtown. Isn't that the best? Like that's... Now that I moved out to the forest, one of my upside favorite parts to touring is like waking up again in like a downtown where I can just like, you know, put some shit on and go grab some shit and walk around and just see what's around. Like, you know,
totally.
That's a fun part of it. Do you usually get out and about on your days off?
I try to. Yeah. I know like, you know, some of the guys like the just hole up in the room kind of deal, but I like to like do half of the day like that, and then I also like to kind of, my thing is always coffee shops and then bookshops, so that's like my two things that I'll throw into maps and see what's around. So
you're like a daytime adventurer.
Yeah, I like to go
out. You prefer to get out during the day. What about like a dinner? Will you try to organize a dinner with some people, or you're out on that?
Yes. No, honestly, I am the one that usually tries to organize the dinners. Okay. I'm the one sending the text like, hey guys, how's 6 o'clock sound? And then everybody's like, well, I eat at 5 or like, it's,
and then you end up eating with like one other person.
Yeah. It's usually me and Scott, our TM. Yeah. We're the dinner adventure guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That happens to me a lot. Like you get the initial like 8 interested.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time it's like, get cracking, we're getting an Uber. Everyone's like, totally. Oh, you know, like I have laundry in, or, you know, I had Chipotle at 3 or something, you know?
Yeah. I always have this in my mind of like all of us, like 10 of us at this like really cool, you know, brew pub, and we're all hanging out and having
connecting fun.
And then, and then fast forward to 6 o'clock and it's like, I guess we'll just go to whatever's closest. Yeah.
Who would you rank out of the Menzingers? Who would you rank like most likely to leave and most likely to not leave?
Oh, like leave a dinner plan?
No, leave a hotel room.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'll give it to you straight here. I think Eric is the not leave. Oh, okay. I usually don't see him.
He's a never leave.
Yeah, he's like, I'm here. I'm just like, we won't hear from him for the rest of the day.
What do you think? What do you think he's up to in there?
If I had to guess, we have this joke that he loves like hotel TV. So like, you know, when you go to a hotel and it's always like American Pickers or like Impractical Jokers.
Yes.
That's his vibe. So I just picture him like, like laughing alone to Impractical Jokers with like, you know,
peppering some in some like bar rescue.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, uh-huh. So, you know, to throw him under the bus a little. Yeah, that would be him.
That's really not that bad. You're not like, no. You know, I think he's holed up in there like blasting Adderalls and, you know, like yeah. choking himself while he, you know, watching like innocuous, whoa. like shitty hotel TV. Like, it's not so bad. You're yeah. good, Eric. You're good.
Yeah. Tour life, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's wild.
And then I think Tom would be the next like, okay, I'm going to go out and adventure. He's the guy.
Restless soul.
He is. Yeah. He'll be like getting into some weird shit somewhere. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. A mushroom adventure or something like
exactly.
that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Well, what do you, so after we're done with this, is that the plan? Coffee shop and books?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to do a little bit of, Google mapping and, you know, see what's around. I think we are, I don't know. I feel like we're near some sort of like shopping area or something. You know, there's always that strip of like,
right.
Whatever vintage or whatever kind of stuff like that. Yeah. So that's probably my vibe. Yeah.
That sounds good. So you were in St. Louis last night, Dallas tomorrow. You're in the Midwest. You're in about the middle of a tour. Mm-hmm. How you feeling? Like these days, you know, you've been at it a long time. How do you hold up like mentally, physically, like midway through a tour? Do you have like a barrage of drummer injuries like most of us, or how you holding up?
I mean, I will say generally pretty good, honestly. Honestly, like I don't know. Lately I've been very much like into, you know, it's funny that it takes so long sometimes, but just taking care of myself.
I know, right?
You know, like all those years of just like beating the hell out of myself and you know, I don't know. And you know,
we thought it was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Like but it's like, you know, as you know, it's like you can only live that fast for so long until you have to like treat a tour as like you know, I look at it as like a 4 week like workout or like training or something. Yeah, I don't know. Sure. Because like it's thankfully I don't feel physically like shitty or anything, but I do make it a point to like, okay, like maybe try not to eat super late after a show. Or like if I do have the off day, like go to the hotel gym and, you know, stretch it out. Like I have my whole stretch thing that I do. I don't know. Generally, I honestly feel pretty good. We're like halfway in and I feel pretty fresh still. I'm feeling all right.
What kind of stretch thing are you talking about? Give me specifics. Like what do you do on an off day? And like, what do you do, you know, hour or two, like before a show?
Yeah. So, usually in the morning I try to do, so I have this app, it's called Fitbod. It's great.
Okay.
And it kind of like generates a workout for you and it has like stretches included and stuff. So it's honestly
cool. Does it work?
Yeah. It really does. Like it's really, it'll tell you like, oh, this day this muscle is like 88% recovered. So, you know, you should be all right to do something like this. It's like actually really sick. Yeah. So I just kind of follow that, to be honest. So like any day, like whatever it tells me to do, I just kind of do it. And then before we play, usually about an hour before we play, I just start doing all kinds of like yoga stretches. Cause I do some yoga at home and yeah, that's like really been game changing. Like honestly, funny story too, when we were on tour with Descendants like a couple years ago, which was so sick, and Bill Stevenson, he would come into our room every night and do his whole like yoga stretch routine with us that was like 10 minutes long.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he would show us all these things, and that like really, I always stretched before, but then that really got me into like specific stuff that, you know, I was like, dude, this guy's still killing it. So I'm
gonna
trust him.
You gotta grace me with this workout. Yeah. That's like,
oh yeah, yeah.
That's some like holy grail kind of stuff. I need to know. Is it is it bad form if you give it to me, or like do I have to try? Because I don't really know Bill. I've met him a couple times and just been basically intimidated and didn't really talk very much.
I mean, yeah, same. Even after a full tour, I'm still just like, hey man, how's it going?
Yeah.
but no, I mean, really all it is just like a you know, 5 or 10, I don't even know, like just stretches really. You know, it's not like a super rigorous thing. Yeah. It's just like a bunch of stretches that he would show us. And we still do them like every night. It's hilarious. He's like a wizard.
Yeah, that's awesome. And especially, like, you know, that's one of the great things about watching Descendants these days is, you know, you sometimes expect a band who played songs like they played to sound different or like not be as fast or come off the same way after what, you know, 40 years or something.
Dude, yeah.
But like you see the Descendants and you're like jumping up and down to those songs from the 80s, like with the same speed, the fills are perfect. So this is one of those things that, I'll do whatever he does, you know, I'll take the wisdom. I need it. Like I just recently found out, I was really happy to find this out. I always eat a banana before I go on stage. It's part of my new routine, a little potassium. I used to like, when I did a run of shows in like 18, I was like drinking iced coffee on stage. And I've now found that to be counterproductive in a lot of ways. Especially for the mind, the heart.
Yeah.
It does make the arms move fast, but everything else suffers. So
you're just sweating, but not from the movement.
Yeah,
just from like
just
anxiety.
Bad, just bad. You know, and one person looks at you sideways and all of a sudden you're like, what? Fucking kill you. Well, you don't like this song? You know, like, not good.
Yeah.
Not good. Dude, I puked from drinking too much iced coffee once.
On stage?
When I was like 18. I used to wait tables and like with a hangover, I'd just guzzle that stuff until I fucking puked.
Whoa.
Oh, dude.
Iced coffee puke. Gross.
Like four pints of iced coffee, dude.
But were you drinking that much iced coffee because you had alcoholic beverages the night before? Did that add to the
puking? Yeah, but I was 18. I just was like, you know. Yeah, it was just a little tired.
You were probably smoking cigs, filterless, because it was the late 70s.
Yeah. Rips the filters off and just chucks
going
it.
Crazy.
Hand rolled.
Yeah.
Nice.
No. But unless it's smoking.
But anyway, I bring up the banana thing because I was, you know, trying to stay away from like just guzzling coffee to the end and stuff. So banana's a nice little pick me up, you know, it's like sits well in the stomach and get, you know, so it's not weird. And then I found out that the Bruce Springsteen, you know, who's like well into his senior years and plays 3 hours shows, which is remarkable to me, eats a banana on like the way to stage.
I'm wow,
like,
okay.
Yes. I'm like, nice. Okay, I got like one of the ones, like nailed it, nailed the audition. I was real happy about that.
I'm going to adopt that. I think that's great. They're like really good for cramps and stuff too. Like, you know, that's what I hear anyway.
Good for the reflux.
Yeah. Dude, all right, I'm in.
This is just like the conversations we used to have when we first met, right? Like
back in
Wilkes-Barre VFW or whatever.
Yeah, they're like, hey man, you got a banana on you?
I know. But if so, that's what I think. I'm like, I often say like, oh, I wish somebody told me, you know, about like what you're talking about, you know, taking care of yourself and the stretching. Like, I wish someone told me that before. But what if we were hanging out and some dude our age now came up to us and was like, fellas, like, really, you're in great bands and you might, you know, still be playing in like 20 years. So you should probably do this and this. I'd be like, get the fuck out of here, clown shoe. You know, I wouldn't have heard it.
So funny enough, I do have like a quick story that really ties in right now, because I remember I was in Providence, Rhode Island. We were playing a show and we were on tour with Hot Water Music, and it was my birthday. It was my 27th birthday. I remember this. So it was like 2013. And I was backstage sitting on the couch next to George Ribello, the drummer, and he was about to go on stage. And he was putting like that, you know, what is it, like Bengay or like the muscle cooling thing?
right.
Like on his shoulder.
Like freeze on or whatever. It's,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
And me being like 27, like a little asshole, I was just like, dude, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, yeah. He's like, I need it for my shoulder or my arm or whatever. And I was like, oh, that sucks. You know, I don't think I said that, but I was thinking it. And then he was like, how old are you? And I was like 27. And I think he said at the time he was 37, which is how old I am now.
Quite a difference.
He was like, you'll be doing it one day.
Yeah.
And thankfully not yet, but I could see how it could help.
Sure, it's coming. Yeah. And in typical understated George Ribello fashion, I imagine.
Oh yeah. Like, you'll be there.
Yeah. George Abella blew my mind when I first toured with him, because I got to tour with him with the Draft first. So we were playing, you know, quite small venues and stuff, and doing like, you know, some real proper van touring together. And I knew him, you know, I'd seen him a dozen times playing in Hot Water, and I was a huge fan already. So I'm just kind of like watching him the whole time, and kind of in this way of like, oh, what does like George do before a show? You know, because whatever he does, I should do. It's probably some crazy like jazz rudiments I've never seen, and like, you know, things like this.
Yeah.
And I remember at a show in like somewhere in the Gulf in Florida, I want to say like Fort Myers or like something like that. And we're playing like a bar, and it was the night of a Red Sox playoff game. And George is a big Red Sox fan. He's at the bar wearing a leather jacket, drinking a beer with his headphones in, listening to the Red Sox game. And we play, and, you know, like, and then it's like, it's really close to like when they're going to play, and he's still kind of in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait, is he going to warm up? Like, he must, because these drum parts are like really hard, you know? And before I know it, like, dude, he just like kind of, I think, grabbed a fresh beer, walked on stage, like basically took the leather jacket off and one earbud out and just like smoked the set.
Yeah.
Just like, and so effortlessly, you know, like where it looked easy. It's not like he was laboring up there. And at one point, even like between songs, pops the little earbud back in and like, I think checked the score.
Yeah.
And like popped it out, and I'm like, whoa, gangster. So he was like the opposite lesson to me, where like you also shouldn't get like too worked up, right? Like I've had times where I've like overstretched and kind of like over gotten like anxious for a show when like you know, a method like that might have been a little closer to better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, it's definitely a balance. It's like, you don't want to go too hard. I always think like, okay, well, I'll do this thing or that thing. Like, I don't know, jumping jacks or whatever the hell, you know, just something right. to want, like get my heart rate up or something.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, you know, you also do have to still play for like an hour and a half. So maybe you want to save a little bit of energy, you know,
That's right.
Something. Yeah. So my biggest thing now though, is I have to break this habit. I've been in the habit of drinking like a sugar-free Red Bull before we play.
Okay.
And I don't even know if it actually does anything. You know what I mean? It's just like one of those things where you're just like, is it like, is this even giving me anything? I've just been like doing it for so long.
It's just become habitual.
Yeah, it totally is. So I need like a different, I need a replacement for that. Hmm. I think like, I don't know. I'm not like a late coffee drinker. So I just need something to like.
Would it be nice in that spot? Do you like a... You like a nice cold, like flavored seltzer, like something like that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's that's probably good. Something with some bubbles. Yeah.
Yeah. And you got nice tour managers now. I bet you could even be like, you could have like a mandarin, a lime and a lemon. Yeah. You could have like all three.
A
just
flight.
Set up. Yeah. A flight. of
a seltzer flight. That's where we're at now. Yeah.
Treat yourself.
Yeah, why not, right?
It's better than fucking Red Bull.
Totally.
Yeah, you a kidney stone or something. Yeah.
I know. I'm just like, it's just become this thing. I gotta shake it.
How long are Menzinger's sets these days?
So I think this tour, it's been about an hour 20. It always floats between like the 115, like hour 15, hour and a half mark, just give or take, you know? It's somewhere in there.
Do you gauge like good shows, like shows that just feel good, you go longer and vice versa, or is it pretty set?
It's pretty set. Like on an occasion, like we don't usually throw songs in the middle of a set, but if we come off before the encore and we'll be like, wow, this show is insane, we'll maybe add like one or two to the to the encore.
Okay.
We were in last tour we did over the summer, we were in Athens, Georgia at the 40 Watt Club, which was like,
oh yeah.
So incredible.
It's like a legendary spot, right?
Yeah. It's like REM and, you know, B-52s and all these bands like got their start.
Yeah. I don't think I have played there. I know it, of course, from, you know, like history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, it was incredible.
So it was a great spot, huh?
Great spot and such a fun show. And so we came off stage and we were like, dude, we all felt like we could just keep playing, you know? It was like one of those things.
Yeah, just had the juice.
Totally. So we played, you know, the two, I think, songs that we were going to play in the encore. And then we just threw in an Operation Ivy song and a Rancid song on top of it, just because
Which ones?
Knowledge and, Ruby Soho, is it? Ruby Soho. I always get confused. But yeah, so it was just like, those are like our two go-to covers that we'll just be like, if you know, if we come out with those, having like a really good time. Yeah.
How long have you guys been playing those songs since in the day?
Yeah, probably since me and Tom started playing together, which is awesome. You know, when we were teenagers or something.
So they're in the repertoire,
It's
not like you got to practice it. Like, you're good to go. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. And when you're on stage these days, you know, as of course we're going to talk about a bunch, cause you know, we are older now. I hate to frame everything. Maybe I'm alienating younger people who attempt to listen to this podcast. I'm not sure, but you know, back in the day, I used to gauge a good show based on we got 9 headwalkers, you know, it was pumped up the whole time. And it was one of those. And, you know, I've found that a little bit of a misnomer to judge a show by these days. Cause there are some great shows that are just a little more low energy in that physical sense, you know, but they're still good shows. Like, how do you gauge a good show these days? Like, has it changed for you as well? Like, how you've had to kind of gauge it?
You know, honestly, I think it's kind of the same as it's always kind of been. Like, we're such a, I think collectively, especially for myself, but I think I can speak for everybody, it's a crowd energy thing. So a good show for us is when people are moving, singing, you know, not necessarily have to be crowd surfing, but it's a plus.
sure. Encouraged.
It's encouraged. Yeah, for sure. Honestly, I think that's it, because for us, it's like we kind of make our set list in a way where there's not too many lulls. Like, we'll play one or two slower songs, but we spread them out. So we try to keep the energy up. You know, I think that that's what we like to do on stage. Sure. Like, we like to just keep it at 10 the whole time. And I think that's what people like when they come see us. So
That's awesome.
If we're at 10 or we're attempting to be at 10 and the crowd's at 5, you know, that's gonna, you know, we're gonna feed off them. They're gonna feed off us. So it's so for us, I think a good show really is if the energy's there. I mean,
sure.
That's not to say that.
Does a 5 pull you guys down to 8?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like we're still okay, that was great. But I think we can always find the good and even maybe a calm, quiet set. We're always well, hey, we played really well. We sounded tight, you know, like that.
You guys are optimists.
I think so. Yeah. But honestly though, it's a big change in vibe when the crowd is just Sunday night, you know, crickets. We're so used to, and we're very lucky to have crowds like that, that are just crazy energy the whole time. So we're spoiled. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you also give it to, you know, it's what you give is what you get. And if you're committed to that high energy show, you'll keep a high energy show forever, which is awesome. You know, have you ever, I sometimes grimace watching security handle people coming over the top and stuff. Is that ever a problem for you? Do you ever just be like, oh my God, please fucking catch him?
It's kind of all over the place. More often than not, I'd say, honestly, no bullshit, I think that security has been doing, at least in my recent memory anyway, a really good job of catching people and being on top of shit.
That's cool.
But there are those times, actually it was just, I want to say last night or the night before, there was an instance where a smaller person was coming over the crowd, probably, you know, a teenager or something, and just getting tossed around. And they were, all the security guards were on one side of the barricade, catching some other kids. And then Tom had to reach down into the barricade and tap a security guard on the shoulder and be like, yo, dude, right over there.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And last second, you know, caught this kid. So, you know, they're doing, they're like, it's complete damage control in there sometimes. So I can only imagine how crazy it is for the security guards to have to like be on top of this. But there are times when I'll see somebody coming closer and closer to the barricade or crowd surfing and something. I'm like, oh shit. Like, I hope, you know, like yeah. I'll freeze up and like tense up for a second.
Like when one of the big boys is coming over or something.
Yeah. And you see somebody go down really hard and like, yes. I'll just stare until I see the head pop up and I'm like, all right, they're good.
So are you like me? Like, my wife teases me and she calls me the owl when Gaslight plays because I can find her anywhere in the crowd. Are you the same way? Like, are you very like conscientious of the crowd and like what's going on around you? Or are you in like the zone?
No. I think the former, I think like to a fault almost sometimes where I'm very much like, I get very distracted by what's happening in the crowd it's almost like being at an airport, you know, it's like people watching and it's like fun. Uh-huh, uh-huh. It's like, you know, you see people like, oh, there's people over there like screaming, having fun. And then there's people over here that look like they're bored as hell. Like, why are they even in the front?
what are you doing up here?
If they're that tired. Yeah. So it's kind of all over the place. But honestly, like I get very distracted by stuff going on around me. And, most of the time it's awesome and it's like fun stuff to watch and it's cool.
Like, but good, like, distraction. Yeah,
exactly. But once in a while I'll be like, you know, you get taken. So my thing too is, I think this goes in line with what you're saying. I get kind of, I freeze up when on the sides of the stage, there are friend or, drummers that like I don't really know but I like look up to, so like and then I'm like I get really distracted by that. So to be honest, if you're on the side of the stage, or I always get this way with Neil Hennessy, Lawrence Arms, there's certain dudes who I'm like, oh dude, I gotta bring it, you know.
I would make you hypersensitive.
Oh, dude, totally.
No way. Yeah. Oh, no.
Dude, yeah.
I'd be on the side being like, yeah, 16.
Yeah.
I love it. Yo, drive that shit, Joe. Dude. All right. Next time I watch you guys, I'm going to make a sign to make sure that you know I'm encouraging you and I want you to
breathe.
Yeah.
Dude, I can't help it. You know, it's one of those things where I'm always like, you know, especially I think it's a thing with drummers where like we have such a club, you know, like nobody really understands what it is to be a drummer unless you're a drummer, you know.
It's true.
So I'm always like, okay, I gotta play good for my guys.
Well, because there's so few people. Like if you're to do something fun, you know, like how many nights do you like rip something like kind of fun that like just nobody notices? You know, you're like, well, it's great. Yeah. I hope someone in the crowd picked up on that or something, you know?
Oh my God. Totally. Usually if anything, it's like one of the guys, you know, in the band, like looking back to me, like, and they'll kind of give me like, oh, what the hell was that? What was that thing that you just did?
Yeah. I remember when we toured with, when Derek Grant with the trio and, you know, of course, like he knows I sweat his playing and he knows he's fucking awesome. And there would be times in the set where he'd be like in the middle of a song, and he would just cross over into like, you know, playing 16s, like lefty, you know, or play open or something just to kind of be like, yo, what's up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that, can you? You know, but with a little smirk, I was like, no, I can't. It's true.
Dude, yeah. Oh my God, dude. It's all the time. That was like what I was saying about the Descendants tour. I mean, it's cool enough to look over and see like those guys watching you play.
Sure.
And then, but then you're like, oh my God, dude, like this guy invented probably most of these beats that I'm playing right now. So I'm like especially just very conscious and like maybe too aware of that. Yeah.
It's tough, man. Well, speaking of making beats, like what's like the songwriting process for the Menzingers these days? Like, are you all, you know, still getting in a room together and working things out? Or are you demo sending? Like, what's the process of, you know, getting a Menzingers record together these days?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of fresh still because we just finished our last record, writing wise anyway, like earlier this year, spring, I guess.
Right.
So, Yeah. And for this one, especially, we wrote it over probably the course of like over a year. We were just, you know, with COVID stuff, like post COVID and tours mm-hmm. getting shuffled around, we had a lot of time at home to write. So, but it's still like, yeah, we have our practice space and we still just go into the room and somebody will just bring something that they've been working on, or a song will come completely just from a jam. Like we might just me and Eric will just be like jamming on something, and then that'll kind of set like a foundation for a groove or something. And then, but I mean, a lot of times too, Tom and Greg will just bring choruses, vocals. I mean, sometimes even full skeletons of songs. Right. So, and then we kind of all fill in the gaps. But to be honest, it really is all over the place. It goes from being incredibly collaborative, where like something will come from absolutely nothing with the four of us in the room, or it'll be like Tom or Greg being like, oh, I've been working on this thing at home for a while, let's try to hash this out and make it a full song. So yeah. And the last record, actually, we wrote most of it in our practice space. We have another little room that's basically just our like a control room, which is really cool. So we had our computer set up and we would just record everything that we did.
And that, how close do you all live to the practice space?
It's not far. It's in a different part of the city, probably like 15 minute drive.
Oh, okay. So it's like, when you all are home and you have a record coming up, do you have like, Monday, Wednesday, Friday we meet, or it's more just mm-hmm. like, we have stuff to work on. Like, let's get in there. Like, how regimented are you guys?
So when we have a long period of time at home, like for this record, when we were writing it, we would do that. We would set up some kind of schedule. Like this week we're going to do Monday to Thursday, or this week we're going to like go all week till Friday. If we really are trying to like get something done, you know, if we're in like a groove. So we try to have like a schedule just because we don't really have schedules otherwise. So it's really we need some structure, and it keeps us accountable. And then, you know, everybody will go home that night and work on something or play with something. This time we did a lot of out of the studio stuff too. So everything we did, we would put right into Logic, and then we would go home and all of us would like edit our parts separately. And then the next day come and be like, oh, this is what I did. And then we'd listen to it and then play it. So we had this like crazy, like multimedia, like system happening, and Dropbox and all this kind of shit happening. So we were like really in a groove for it.
That's cool. Cause you know, it's like you're using, since you're so close and you actually get to get in a room together, it's like you're using the tech, you know, more as like a tool than a crutch, you know, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Like that you're mixing the two. It's probably the sweet spot, right? Like,
yeah, it was awesome. And honestly, for me, like I've always been so analog with everything. Mm-hmm. Like I've always mm-hmm. just been like, just give me a real drum set and cymbals, and like that's just, you know, that's, I never got into like making beats or like really like a lot of the digital aspects of recording or whatever, but this kind of forced me to do that. So it was really cool to learn too, you know. So I thought it was super helpful for me, especially breaking out of my box a little with that stuff.
That's awesome. And speaking of like out of the box, I remember talking to Tom a little when you were in the studio, and he was kind of describing where you guys were. And I was like, wait, what? Where the fuck did you guys go? So what was like, can you explain to me like where you went and how that came to be? And like, I don't know what the vibe of that experience was like.
Yeah. Yeah. So we recorded, at a spot called Sonic Ranch, which was in middle of the desert in Texas. It was, we flew into El Paso, and then you drive like 40 minutes outside of El Paso, literally to nothing. You know, there was a tiny town, maybe 10 minutes from the studio, but it was like, you'd have to go another half hour to really get to anywhere to like buy stuff. And so we, you know, whatever, but
proper
so
out there.
We were out there. It was right on the Mexican border, which was really cool. So So Sonic Ranch is just this complex.
Could you literally see the Mexican border, like where you were staying?
So there was, it's, I'm trying to paint this in the best way possible, cause it really is like just crazy, and it's kind of hard to explain.
give me like a movie, because right now I'm in like No Country for Old Men. Is that correct?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah, okay. That really is kind of the vibe here.
Like There Will Be Blood, No Country for Old Men vibe. Okay. Which I think may have been filmed in the same place, actually. Okay.
Yeah, like West Texas. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, look in any direction and you just see horizon, you know.
And potentially Josh Brolin.
Yeah, yeah, and potentially some gunslingers. Yeah.
Wow.
But dude, it was wild. So yeah, right.
And
from,
what's the complex like? Is it like a house or like apartments?
Yeah. So okay. So there's about, I think I want to say 4 or 5 studios, all ranging in sizes, that are spread out throughout the complex. So there are some studios where you can drive from place to place. That's how big this whole complex is.
And you're on quads or something cool.
We did have dirt bikes the last day. and we they were like little mini bikes, but we got to just ride them all around the ranch. And it was like one of the coolest days ever. So you have like, our studio had like a ranch house right next to it. And that's where we stayed. So there was, everybody had their own bedroom. There was a kitchen, all this stuff. They had staff at the studio that would come in and like make your bed every day.
Oh, wow.
And like, yeah, they were, but it was very, like homey feeling, you know. It wasn't like this, you know, lavish hotel experience. It was like very legit, like ranch living, I guess. I don't know. And so then you'd go every day to the main house, which was next to the main studio, which was a drive, probably a mile away. And you, they would have food for you all day, breakfast, lunch, dinner. You just go into this kitchen, like in a house, and all the bands that were recording at the place would all like eat together. So there was all these little dining rooms.
Wow.
And so, you know, you'd get to be talking to like some, I don't know, we were talking to some band from Nashville. I don't know. They were some like singer songwriter, backing band, and like all this crazy shit is just happening. And then, you know, you'd go back to your studio and work. But
how many studios are in that complex?
I want to say like 5, maybe.
Wow. That's so interesting.
And they're all in their own buildings. We were in this amazing studio that was kind of new. So it was like one of the newer buildings on the property, and it was called Big Blue. And just like beautiful. Like I just can't, it's so hard to explain, but I mean, it's just like being, like there's no distractions, you know, you're just out there and you're just focused. And it was really like really special thing. I would love to go back and record again there. It was just amazing.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
How did you find out about this place? Like, did the person you were working with, like, specifically want to go there? Like, how did that come to be?
Yeah, so and then also we had heard about it. We knew some people who had recorded there in the past, and they were like, oh, dude, it's like the dream place to record. You know, it's so awesome. And then we had heard about it. We had, you know, heard certain things, but Brad Cook, the dude we recorded with,
right,
he does a lot of his records there.
Okay.
So he kind of suggested, he was like, this would be amazing if we could all go down there. And so he's from North Carolina. So we all flew down there and you know, met him and his engineer and stuff. And so, yeah, it was, I think, mainly on him, you know, to be like, hey, like suggesting it.
Sure,
anyway.
Sure.
Yeah, because he goes down there like a few times a year and does records.
Is that where like War on Drugs did their records, or like, I know he worked with them,
I think they
right?
did. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think they did. And then Waxahachie,
yeah, right.
has done some stuff there. Bon Iver.
If you're listening, babe, I've been trying to get in touch with Katie Crutchfield for a long time to come on the Going Off Track.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know any other avenue besides for being creepy, so I haven't done it. So if for some reason Katie's listening to this, let's come on. I want to have a chat. We haven't seen each other since the dirty old days, like
yeah,
clubs,
yeah.
You know,
house anyway, shows and stuff.
Yeah, probably, exactly. Yeah. It'd be fun.
Yeah,
to chat.
Yeah. Let's make it happen.
All right. Anyway, our sidebar. You know. Anyway, so that sounds like a crazy experience. Do you think it like? How did that you know lend itself to like the sound of the record or just like your vibe? You know, were you super relaxed? Were you guys in a different kind of headspace as a result? Did anyone like start fucking doing some cool drugs at night or like riding horses? Like, like what was going on?
Yeah, all of the above.
Yes.
Yeah, it was to be honest with you, man. Like, yeah, it was absolutely incredible because I can only compare it to being in bigger cities for recording, and especially like, you know, we had some ideas on the table to like record in LA and,
right.
you know, be right in the middle of it. And to me, that just sounded miserable. Like I don't,
yeah,
like, there's too much just mm-hmm. going on. Like how can you stay focused and stay in a creative headspace when there's that much happening, you know,
yeah,
at least for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, being on the ranch was absolutely like I think you could see it or hear it in the finished product. I mean, it really was just so relaxed. Like the days were just super long, but just not that like grueling studio, feeling you usually get where you're
right.
just like, you have, you know, it just feels like you have all this weight on you to like, drill this stuff in, you know, you're on a time crunch. So it was absolutely the complete opposite of that. Everything
right.
was just so relaxed. You know, you'd walk out of the studio to get some air. We had the door open the whole time and you're just looking out at the desert and you're
yeah.
just like, just the breeze coming in from the desert. And, you know, it's just like, there was nothing around and feeling that kind of space around you.
Sure.
I think really, I know that it just, it gave it this focus that I don't think I've ever had before going into the studio, you know, like
Very
it
cool.
really just put everything else away and you
yeah.
were just there and you were in it and it was completely relaxing. Yeah.
How many days total was it?
I think so. We were there for 2 weeks, I believe. Yeah.
Right.
Nice.
Cause we had done some pre-pro.
Did you mix there too?
No, that happened later. So yeah, we did some pre-production, in North Carolina before that, a couple months before the record, and hashed some stuff out with Brad. And then, so when we got to the studio, we were kind of just ready to go.
Nice.
We still worked on stuff there and hashed things out, but we had the bulk of what we were going to lay down, pretty much set.
No one can afford to mix in the studio anymore. I mean, Jesus, who's
paying
for
cool.
that? I don't want to pay to sit there.
Yeah.
For 5 days.
Dude, I would have stayed there for another week. That
I mean, I would
me,
definitely
yeah.
do it. I would just like, I would just be in pain paying for it the whole time.
Yeah.
was the experience ever on the reverse, like slightly terrifying? Like at night, like how dark is it? Did you hear coyotes or rattlesnakes? Like, was there anything funky with the border? Like, are there, is that shit patrolled and stuff like that? Like, I've never even been around that. Like,
yeah, yeah, no, it was actually. So during the day, you'd see Border Patrol pickups just cruising through right past the studio door, and they would just be kind of looking around. And yeah, so
even though it's private property right there, like, they're allowed to just like cut right through.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, because they were there. We were probably a mile from the border. I mean, this is another idea of how large this property is. And the day that we had those bikes, we rode them down to the border, and you really just get there and it's this huge, ominous wall. And it was creepy to see that, and very weird in a lot of ways, kind of like surreal.
Dystopian kind of.
Oh my God. Yeah. Seeing like a huge, like, metal wall in the middle of a desert, like, it, that just goes for miles. It was really strange.
So you see the wall, but like end to end, you can't see any like end to it anywhere.
I don't remember being able to. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Thankfully you couldn't see the wall from where we were. You had to kind of go far down this road to get to it. So like, I think it probably would have ruined the vibe if we could like see this wall the whole time we were there.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, and then at night we would have like fires out, and it was me and Tom would go out at night and take pictures, and Tom especially super into that. So yeah, he was like taking pictures of the stars and stuff. I mean, it was like the stars were just incredible. I mean, there was nothing around, super quiet. Yeah.
Like no light pollution, just like just like end to end stars probably, right?
Totally. Yeah. Cool. And it was just beautiful at night. Like you would just sit out there, and I mean, it was like, it's another thing. It's just so hard to explain. It was just so relaxing, and thankfully no scares with any animals, but I have heard that, you know, you could hear like coyotes and stuff. And apparently they have these huge like flies that like chase you there. They were explaining it to us this one night. Apparently there are these like huge, like dragonfly looking things that are like the size of birds, and they'll just come up on you. It was explained to us in this way that we totally thought we were just getting fucked with. Like, we didn't think this shit was real, but apparently it's like a real thing. And I can't remember the name, unfortunately, but yeah. Oh. So there's some weird shit out there.
So you're just supposed to like cruise around at night with like a tennis racket, like just in case.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's intense. Did you get into like any, you do some mushrooms or some ayahuasca or something like that?
I did some mushrooms. Yeah. There was a lot of opportunities to just kind of smoke a lot of weed or something. And, you know, I don't drink, anymore. So like, but yeah, so that was fun. One night.
Did you have any funky experiences with like the desert and the stars and that, like, did anything come together for you there? So that's a kind of nice setup, let's say.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it is like the dream scenario for like that kind of shit. Other than just the overall vibe of being there in that kind of headspace, like nothing, you know, nothing too crazy.
You didn't like access the third eye or anything?
No, nothing like that intense. But I mean, you know, being out there and, you know, having taken one night we were out, and me and Tom just found this like all this like scrap shit in this pile. So we were like, Tom had these crazy lights, and he was like putting lights underneath these things and taking these crazy pictures. And we had just taken mushrooms. So like, it was like a playground of just like all this shit. And we were, I mean, just stuff like that. We were, you know, it feels like being a kid. You're just like running around, like playing with trash, which is essentially what we were doing, which is way more interesting when you're on mushrooms.
Definitely. Sure. Sure. Well, it should probably be that interesting all the time. You just see it a different way. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what a cool experience. You can hear it in the record too. I mean, like, you know, I of course listened to it when it came out, and I gave it another spin today just to brush up, and you can really hear kind of some boundaries. And I feel like with you guys, it's maybe more like almost like letting go. It seems like you're truer to your influences now than maybe you were in the past. And I dare to say this, and please don't take it as an insult. I feel like you've embraced the 90s a little bit more because you guys love it, and it sounds like it, and it sounds kind of awesome. And I hope hope you take that as a compliment.
Absolutely.
Is that an accurate like feeling of what was going on there, like songwriting wise?
Yeah, 100%. It really felt like Brad understood us in a way that he's just this incredibly, I'm trying to think of the word, just very perceptive kind of person. And he really could pick up on little things that we would be holding back on or, you know, and he would be like, no, like do that. You know, if that was your first thought, then run with it, you know? And it was the whole like mantra of like the whole thing was really like every time, for example, we'd play a riff and then somebody in the room would be like, oh dude, that sounds like the Replacements. Like, that's so sick. Brad would be like, no, it doesn't. That sounds like Tom May from the Menzingers, you know?
Yeah,
like,
fuck yeah.
And really drilled that in. Or I'd be like, yo, I just did this crazy fill. It was like this killer's fill. And he was like, no, that was a drill fill, you know? Like, yes. Just shit like that. And really helped us strip away all of that stuff. And you know, keeping the influences there, of course, but like not relying on something to like sound like somebody else. Like just trying to strip it down to what we would do. I remember one of the takes, Greg was in he was in the vocal booth and he was singing something. And I was sitting at the control thing with Brad, and Greg kind of did this thing that's very Greg. It's kind of like a raspy yell thing.
Yeah.
You know,
I noticed I noticed that. Yeah. He's pushing it like a little harder with the screams. Yeah.
Totally. And that's something that he always used to do. And he kind of lost it and grew with his voice to be able to like kind of sing whatever. But, he looked at me, Brad was like, is that something that Greg does? Like, is that like a thing like he would do live or like whatever? And I was like, yeah, dude, actually, you know, he's always had that kind of raspiness to it. So he would like hit the button and the talk back and be like, yeah, Greg, let's hear more screams, you know, get crazy with it, get more, cool. You know, just shit like that, man. Yeah. There was a part where there was this is tooting my own horn a little, but
please, this is a drummer forum. You hear how
that's what I'm
you
saying.
You hear how
man.
Quiet Brad's being. You know, guitar Brad doesn't. You know, get out of here.
Yeah,
drummer forum. Talk about the beats.
Yeah, totally. Well, it wasn't even that though. That's what was so cool about this was that. So there was a one part of a song where we needed like this high kind of harmony for the chorus, and I don't know if those guys tried and couldn't hit it, or maybe they were just like. They just hadn't tried, but whatever the situation was, we were all sitting there and then Brad looked at me and he was like, Joe, have you ever sang? And I was like, no, like in the shower, you know, or like backstage when I'm singing like some weird shit. But, he was like, why don't you try this harmony? And I was like, dude, I was so nervous. Like, so he gave me the microphone and just did it like right there in the room.
Like, oh, not really? Even not booth. Even like in a booth?
No, yeah, just right in front of everybody.
Oh, that's exposing.
Yeah, these are guys I've known since I was like in high school, and I was so nervous to do it. And but I did it, and then after like the first take, like his engineer was just like, "Yeah, that was perfect. Like we got it, or whatever." And I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like I don't sing. Like
look
what
at
the
that."
Hell?
So out of nowhere, you got high harmonies in your pocket, baby.
And that was, I mean, I can't describe like how good of a feeling that is when you're just, I mean, that's, you know, it was really breaking out of my comfort zone. So that was something he was just, him being able to pull that kind of stuff out of us and really reaching in deep and extracting that, like that stuff that we've maybe sometimes lost, like, you know, you lose over the years or you forget how to do. So it was, I mean, he was just incredible with that.
That sounds really cool, really nurturing. I like it.
Totally.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's something I uniquely, the manager of your group is an old friend of mine. So I get to poke around and ask questions about your band before I interview you. He was telling me, and I'm very interested in, about this now Italian-American dual citizenship that you've achieved.
Yeah, well, that's cool that he mentioned that.
And I'm like, oh, wow, how interesting. Like, so, like, where did that stem from? Like, how did you find out that it was even possible? And what was that process like?
Dude, it was a process for sure. So I started back in 2018. I had found out, I have a lot of cousins, out there. I have a lot of cousins that were born in Italy. Like most of my dad's side of the family, even people in my like generation were born there. Yeah. So
you grew up with like a bunch of people like born in Italy.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. My grandfather then everybody on that side of the family always speaking Italian when I was a kid, you know, so it was like this, you know, it's always been with me.
Sure.
And then I started to slowly just wonder, I was like, I wonder what the process would be like. And I just from family members and cousins, they already have their passports from when they were kids and they go over there all the time. And I was like, I should look into this. So I did. And it turned out, because my grandfather was born there, I was able to do it.
So that's the requirement essentially, that like one grandparent was born there.
Yeah. So it's kind of messed up in the way that if it's your paternal side, it can go back as far as you need. Great grandfather, great grandmother, it is, it can keep going. On your maternal side, unfortunately, if you have a relative, it has to be, it's like up to a certain generation and then it cuts off.
Oh, weird.
Which is strange. Yeah.
It just is like the opposite weird, too. Cause it's like, I mean, let's be real. You never know who the father is, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Like,
Yeah, not totally.
That's a backward strategy there.
Yeah, but yeah.
Moving on, yeah.
Yeah, dude. But it's crazy, dude. Like, I mean, it was such a process. I had to get all birth certificates and all these records from Italy, from where my grandfather was born, this small village. So
oh, wow.
I had to get this lawyer from that area to get like his birth records. And then I had to get them translated. And this was all sent to me like over months. I mean, it's just such a spanning process.
So you had to use like a third party person. What was that village called?
Fronti.
Okay. What part Fronti, of Italy is it?
So it's Fronti, Nicastro, Catanzaro, Calabria,
wow,
Italy. So okay. It's like tiny village, tiny state, whatever you want to call it there, and then region, and then like, yeah, it's like, so it's in the south. It's like super, super south.
Okay.
In Calabria.
Cool.
So, yeah, so I started, and then a friend of mine, his name's Joe Maro, I should know how to say his name, but he is, he's a dude that used to play in early November, and he now like manages bands and stuff.
Oh,
and
cool.
He had done the same thing. So years ago, when I first started this process, I met up with him for coffee and he helped me so much.
Wow.
He brought his whole portfolio with him of all of his records and all these things he needed and kind of walked me through a little bit of the process. So he was a huge help. So it was just years of submitting paperwork, getting things translated. And then you have to schedule a meeting at the consulate. And luckily Philadelphia has an Italian consulate. So I had like a couple interviews there where you submit all your paperwork and then they make sure you're eligible and all this stuff is good and you have all your paperwork and then they send all that shit to Italy.
Sure.
And then it takes another year for it to get back.
Wow.
And then just this, what was it? September, October, I went for my final consulate visit. And
who are you meeting with there? Like, what are the people like there? Are they like, are they Italian people working at an American consulate? Like, how's that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're like Italian citizens and they're working there and they, you know, they, it's basically like a window that you would go to at like a driver's center or something. You know what I mean? Like it's, I kind of had this picture, like it was going to be this like big lavish, like, you know, like espresso machines.
I mean,
or something,
from where
like.
I grew up, I thought there'd be two stone lions as you enter.
Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps
the
a fountain.
Building itself.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. No, the building itself is beautiful. But then when you get to the actual office, it's just a very sterile,
yeah, government
like
bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you go up to the window and you submit all your stuff and they talk you. They're super nice and they're super encouraging and helpful. And I had my last thing was the passport thing. So I got all my stuff submitted. I've got my passport photos and all this stuff. And I submitted it and I thought, you know, I'd give it to them and then it would take another 6 months for them to actually send me the passport. Like when you apply for a passport for the US or whatever.
To actually get it.
So I got there and I submitted all my stuff and the lady at the window was like, okay, have a seat. We're just going to submit all this and then we'll call you back up. And I was like, oh, okay. And then they call me back up to the window 5 minutes later and just handed me the passport.
Oh,
and
what
I
a
was
surprise.
Like,
what a nice surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. She literally slid it through the window and said, okay, ciao.
That's it. Like, yeah. After all that.
I was like, wait. I was like, I don't have to do anything else.
Yeah. Is this real? Like how many years of work was it? And then she goes, okay, ciao.
Yeah. The most anticlimactic thing. And then, but then I just had this Italian passport in my hand. And I was just like, man. So yeah, man, it was a crazy process, but I found out a lot about family and you know, found out all these cool records of stuff. It was like detective work. Yeah.
Did you find out anything cool about like what kind of like business your family was in or like any kind of cool family history stuff?
Nothing too crazy that I hadn't already known, you know, but mainly it was just about like the sizes of the towns and stuff, like the size town, like that my grandfather was from. Like, I had no idea it was like this tiny place, you know? So yeah, stuff like that. And then years, you know, like years of when he came over that I wasn't sure about. And they actually, at one point of it, I had to file a Freedom of Information Act through the U.S. for his like citizenship documents, basically. Uh-huh. And they sent me a CD-ROM of, and I was like, "What the hell am I supposed to do with this?" You know?
Yeah, Apple should really buy the government, shouldn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. I had to buy this like external drive to plug into my computer to load it.
Right.
And I got these documents off of it, and it was crazy. It was like a drawn picture of my grandfather from like 1959 when he came over here. Yeah, it was like this black and white drawn thing that they must have done there when he came over.
Wow. So they actually sketched someone instead of attempting like take a photo in that moment.
Yeah, because there was no photo. There was no like actual photographs of him from that time. It was just this sketch. Yeah. Wow. And then all of his information like photocopied on this thing, like from like New York where he came over. And yeah, it's crazy.
Was the sketch fairly accurate to the way he looked?
Yeah, it was actually. Wow. Yeah, it was actually pretty
cool.
Impressive. Like, I mean, I mean, he was probably what 30 something at the time.
Sure.
But yeah, it was really cool to see. I actually still have it like saved on my computer. It was really sick.
I love that. Well, what a cool process. So what does it mean now? Like when you go to Europe with the band, do you get to pass through things easier than all the guys? You can start like give them the finger through border checks in Europe and going to get a coffee and they're fucked.
Essentially, like I get to go. Like, you know, when you land and it's like EU residents here, and then you know,
it's
all
what
of their
Ian
passports.
Perkins has been doing to Gaslight for about a decade. When Ian's I'll see you on the other side. Okay.
Yeah, you guys want coffee?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I get to walk into the EU, because that's the cool part about it, is that with it, I get access to the whole EU. So it's any country within. Yeah, so yeah, I can.
So you're
I can
now technically like walk. An EU citizen as a result.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's crazy enough to have the citizenship to one country, but to have it open up all those doors too. Yeah. It's insane. I feel like I still haven't like processed it. It's so cool.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It just kind of happened. So yeah.
I wonder, I don't know if, have you looked into like what this does to you paying taxes over there when you guys play?
Yeah. So as far as the band or whatever, I don't think that it really will change much, but I do know that if you plan on doing anything, like say I would wanted to go there and spend any sort of time, that is something I think I would have to do. Like I would have to pay taxes to live there, whatever. But I haven't looked too much into that yet, because I don't plan on doing that anytime too soon. But when I do, I'll have to kind of, I don't know, I'll have to figure that out, because I don't want to go to Italian jail.
No. Does it give you any more like, do you feel like more like personal independence now to be like more Italian? Like, would you rock like a different kind of clothes now more comfortably, or like it'd be like just backstage cutting up like some hard salami being like, what? Like,
I feel like that's always just been like, I've always just unfortunately had that like stereotype from people anyway, that like, if anything, it makes me want to do it less, because I'm just like, because then they're like, oh, like, wow. Yeah.
Right. Because you're already like flying the flag whether you like it or not.
Exactly. Yeah. But it is. We'll see. I mean, if I go that, I'll probably go there for a year and live and then come back and look like, you know, maybe I'll look like a different person, really adapt the fashion over there or something. Same. Yeah.
You walk around some of those cities in Italy. I mean, men are looking great.
Totally. You know, yeah.
So we could take some cues from those boys. Like, those are some nice looking fellas. Like,
totally. Yeah.
I'm like, you're just on the street here. Why do you need pants that look so nice on you? You know, you're making me look like shit out here. Like, yeah.
You know, and I finally, a while back, stopped smoking, but apparently I'm going to have to probably start doing that again.
Oh, yeah. And rolling. You know, you're going to have to roll.
Yeah. Rolling. Yeah. Yep. And it just goes. It's just
no more drip coffee for you. No more drip coffee.
Oh, no.
Only espresso.
Like, get this. Yeah, get this swell out of my face.
Piss.
Yeah.
In like a year, the guys are going to stop at Dunkin' Donuts and you're just going to sit, like, be like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, no, I don't drink American coffee anymore. Sorry, guys.
I love it. Well, that's awesome. What a cool process.
Yeah, it really was.
So I also was told by Phil that you are a Philly Union obsessed fan.
Yeah, very true.
Emotionally invested. You go to a lot of games, like you season ticket holder?
I'm not a season ticket holder. I would like to be. We're just gone so much that it would be hard to commit. But I do try to go to as many games as I can while we're home. Yeah. I have a couple friends who are super into it too. So it's cool to, like, you know, if I'm home, try to get people together. And yeah, the games are so much fun. It's a little bit outside the city in Philly.
Where is it, by where, like, by the other stadiums are, or is it set aside?
No, unfortunately it's in Chester, away from everything. Yeah. So it's a little bit past the airport. If you're familiar with Philly, not super far, but, you know, totally manageable. But yeah, man, like, about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I have this really good friend who just started bringing me to games, and that was it. Like, I went to a couple games and was just, like, completely hooked. And I honestly, would say to anybody that was curious, like, you go to one or two soccer games and that's usually it. You're just in. It's just so much fun. And it's so much more personal feeling than, like, say, if you go to 80,000 capacity football game or something, Eagles, you know,
game or something. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Which are totally fun, but it's a whole different thing. It's way more communal.
And less shitty, I'm sure, too.
Yeah, the fans are way nicer. Way more respectful.
Have you tied in, like, the Menzingers thing? Like, have you got, like, gotten anyone at the organization to care that you're going to games? Like, big Philly band?
There's
got to be Machiavellian. Let's go back to this, huh, Brad? have you gotten some hookups, nepotism?
A little bit, yeah. Throughout the years, I've always been very vocal, like, on it with, like, social media stuff. So I'll, like, post, like, that I'm at games sometimes. And once in a while, you know, somebody would get back to you and say, like, oh, hey, you know, like, they would, like, repost something from the team. And I'd be like, hell yeah, you know, it's so sick. And then a while back, we actually met with the team to potentially do a song for them.
Oh, really? Like the Philly Union song?
Yeah, like, or, like, you know, not... Like, it was in very early stages and we were just like, how can we incorporate something? So we met with some marketing people there. Ultimately, it didn't go anywhere. And then those people that we met with eventually left the team. So your in is kind of gone.
Sure.
But it was super exciting. You know, they gave us, like, a tour of the place. We went there once and it was really cool. And then over the years, I've had a couple other friends that have worked for the team that I met through, you know, people being fans of the band or, you know, and just like a mutual thing. And so kind of got brought in some ways with that. So there's been some perks with it. I try not to go like too hard because I just not my nature to, like, do that, I guess. But it's, I like to just go and here's an example. So there was an instance where, like, I went to a game and I was in, like, a box thing and it was really cool. And I was with a bunch of other people and bands. And it was, like, this whole thing that they had. It was like friends of the union and influencers and all this stuff. And I was like the only one sitting there in the box, just focused on the game. And everybody else is kind of like bullshitting and networking and drinking and all this stuff. And I was like, right. Yeah. And it's like, honestly, man, I totally much rather just be in the seat watching the game than doing any of this shit.
Dude, that
kind of silly as it sounds.
Oh, I empathize. You know, this is the first year I didn't renew my Nets season tickets, but I had season tickets for the Brooklyn Nets from when they moved to Brooklyn until this season. And, like, sometimes I'd be like, oh, you want to hit a game with me, you know? And the same thing, someone's just like looking to catch up. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, you see out here? I'm like, it's the middle of the fourth quarter. You see what's going on out here? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I know this is nice catch up moment for you, but
yeah.
Like, can we focus in here? You're wasting the dollar. Like, every time you talk to me, you're wasting like $2.50. Yeah, the ticket I just gave you, you know? Like,
you better drink that whole beer.
Yeah, like, well, come on.
It's like the Super Bowl party, you know, where you actually care about the game.
Yes.
Meanwhile, your wife is invited 12 of her friends over.
Oh, yeah, we're going there. Brad, easy. Easy. You're going to sleep on the floor tonight.
Like, hey, I'm a Giants fan. It doesn't happen that often.
Oh, sure. Don't get me started on Tommy DeVito. Oh, Maron.
Oh, man.
So I see Philly's what, 34-50? What are they here? What do we got? Oh, 15 wins, 10 draws, 9 losses, 50. So how are we looking for the playoffs? They in?
Well, I don't know if you want to date what we're doing here, but actually last night, the night before, they lost their semifinal game. So they're out now.
Okay. So they made the playoffs, lost the semifinals last night. Okay. How's the future looking? Got some nice young players you're excited about?
Yeah, honestly, it's really cool. So Philly has this really different thing from a lot of teams where they really like focused on their youth academy for players. Hmm. So they're like pumping out these new players who are super young. Like I'm 17, 18, 19 years old, and they're just like killing it. So we have a lot of really good older players, but also, yeah, there's some kids. There's like a kid like straight out of college, like Drexel, I think. And he's the team and he's, you know, he's killing it. It's really cool in that way. So you get like these homegrown kids that are just coming up that were fans, you know, and now they're like playing on the team.
And you're such a fan that you're like literally following the youth system and stuff.
Yeah. You see who's coming up, you know, it's like, it's super exciting. Cause soccer's crazy too. Like they scout these kids at like 10 years old and they're playing and, you know, they bring them into the academies and
didn't they give Bessie like growth hormones and shit when he was like a little kid?
I mean, sounds about right. Yeah.
I think they did. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I might have to corroborate that so I don't get in trouble here, but, I'm pretty sure that happens. I'm literally Googling Messi growth hormones as we say that. Lionel Messi and HGH, the truth about the best footballer. He had a growth hormone disorder. So he took I was right. He took HGH.
There you go.
Pretty sure some Yankees got suspended half a season for, you know.
But yeah, things are different in other parts of the world, I think. Yeah.
You know, get the kid up to size. He's a great dribbler, right?
Yeah, right?
Come on. So I have to ask this anytime I speak to somebody from where you're from Scranton. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but the office is still a very regular part of my life. It's on all the time. It's literally turned into like the ultimate like background thing for me. If I just need to like settle my mind down and relax. So I've felt like I'm in this world, you know, so much, even still. Mm-hmm. And everybody I know from Scranton has like the obligatory office moment where you saw like Kevin Malone in a pizza place or something like that.
Oh, dude.
What is your, give me, and if by what you said, this could be like a top three. What are like your office moments that you remember?
Oh, dude. So, okay. I have one right off the bat because you mentioned Kevin. I was probably 19, 20. So this was like whenever the hell I was that age, 2005, 6. The show was still on. And I went to a few of my friends. We went to go see the Counting Crows at Montage Mountain in Scranton.
Wow.
And the like guest MC or whatever you call them for the show was Kevin. So he was like, and then we went to a bar downtown in Scranton, best bar, The Bog. Shout out to The Bog in Scranton.
Oh yeah, because Kevin plays drums on the show.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's in the cover band. Yeah. Scrantonicity. Yeah. But so we went to this bar after the show and he was there. And I went up to him and I was like, hey man, you're Kevin from The Office. And he just looked at me and he goes, no, I'm not. And just laughed and like gave me a hug. And I was like, dude, that was so awesome. So there was that. And then I have a really cool one.
Yeah.
So my cousins in Scranton, they own a stone quarry. It's called Godino's West Mountain Stone Quarry.
Oh,
it's
up on this
hill. And there's an episode of The Office.
You have a cousin named Dino who owns a stone quarry.
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't know.
Come with fiction. That's good. That's good right off. All right.
It's really good. So there's an episode.
I want to know more about it. Can you get him on?
Yeah.
I want to talk to Dino.
Well, it's Godino. Like my last name is Godino's Stone Quarry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But his name might be Dino, honestly. Yeah,
Dino Godino.
Yeah, it sounds about right. But there's an episode of The Office where I think it's Jim or somebody, and they're talking to him, and they're like, "Oh, somebody bought a house in the episode," and they're like, "Oh, you bought the house, right? It's on," and somebody else says like, "Yeah, it's at the top of whatever street next to the stone quarry."
And no way.
The street that they talk about is that. I mean, they're talking about that stone quarry. They don't name it, but it is that. So if you see that, that's my family's stone quarry.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool. That's like two part cool. A, the fact that like your family's stone quarry is in The Office. Now I'm definitely gonna look for it. And B, it's cool to know that like when they wrote the show, they were obviously like connected enough with the community that they're like driving around and knew that there was a stone quarry. Like, I like that it wasn't bullshit. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, dude. I mean, so much of that show, you know, when they're in the break room and you see all the menus on the refrigerator and the bumper stickers and all that stuff, they're all real businesses. Most of which are still around.
Are there really two Alfredo's pizzas?
So no, Alfredo's is a place. And it's great, great food, great pizza. But there's one. And I think for the show, they made it like this competing thing. But I only know of one Alfredo's in Scranton.
Okay. Yet. If you're going home to Scranton and you can have, like, give me breakfast, lunch, dinner. You're like, I'm back in Scranton. I got to hit these spots for these.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. So it's been a while since I've been back, to be honest, but I will say breakfast, there's a couple like really small diners that would be really awesome. There's Glider Diner in Scranton, which is right near our old high school. There was this place called Chick's Diner that I think is closed now. And both of those, or at least one, was probably mentioned in the show.
Okay. Well, what do you go for though? You like bacon and eggs or flapjacks? Standard fare?
It is like a straightforward diner, like straightforward East Coast, like greasy. Yeah. So like, yeah, two eggs, bacon, home fries, toast kind of
perfect
thing.
Yeah.
Grand Slam. Would be my go-to.
Grand Slam.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Lunch, there is a spot that we always go to growing up and it's still there called Nikki's Hoagies. Mm. And that's like that place. And then there's another place called Catalano's Hoagies. And those are just like talk about nostalgia,
like legit,
the best. I mean, maybe, I don't know. It's probably pretty subjective because we grew up there, but that's just the spot. You know,
I'm sure it's top class. What do you go there? Do you go cold? Do you go hot?
Like cold Italian hoagie. So you have like the ham, salami, cheese. Uh-huh. Just very straightforward, like sweet peppers or something.
Cola.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Exactly. All provolone, probably.
A lot of oil and vinegar. Yeah.
Oil and vinegar. Sure. Yeah. All about that and the bread.
Sure.
It's like where you really. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
And then dinner, there's a spot that I know they mentioned in the show called Cooper's Seafood.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's a real place. Going there growing up was really cool because the whole thing on the exterior is a big pirate ship.
Yes. Okay.
And, and there's like a lighthouse and like pirates like all over it with like one leg and like a shark and like all this cool shit. And that place is still open and they actually have an office gift shop inside the restaurant.
Yeah. Cause that's where they go for like drinks sometimes and stuff. Right. Like in the show.
Yep.
Okay. So a little fresh catch at Cooper's.
Oh my God. It's so good. It really is just such a good spot.
What do you go for there? What's your meal?
So you have to get the crab bisque soup when you're there. Mm-hmm. Incredible. And then I always go for like some kind of seafood pasta thing. Like I love like a spaghetti kind of linguine or something with like oil-based sauce. That's all different kinds of seafood inside.
Like a clam sauce kind of thing going on.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Crab, clam linguine or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah, that
sounds good.
That was a lot easier to like call up than I thought it was going to be.
These are the old haunts, man. Deep in your heart, that food, when you can connect it to like childhood, it's like some next level shit. You know, when I taste some of that, that go home food, it just warms my heart, you know?
Oh, dude. It just brings you back, man. It's crazy.
That's it. It was nice to catch up.
This is awesome. Yeah.
Brad, isn't the new method of going off track the best?
What's the new method?
Just get like the raddest people just to catch up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. It always has the best conversations when you're not feeling pressured.
And like, when do I get the chance to talk? Like, if I just called Joe and it was like, let's just chat for 80 minutes, there's a chance it'd get awkward at some point, you know? Or Joe would be like, listen, like, I want to go to the gym. It's, you know, time's ticking away here, you know?
The old, the fake ring in the background. Oh, yeah. It's my other line.
Oh, yeah, it's back home. I gotta split. Yeah.
I gotta take this.
Yeah. So I just want to go out to the desert with you and do some drugs and build stuff. Let's get Tom on the horn and have some nice.
Anytime.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, dude, anytime.
You guys can go there and do your drum album.
Listen, Grateful Dead had two drummers.
Hey.
I'm just saying, if the Menzos really go on this kick, fuck it.
I'm talking about you two making your drum album.
Oh, who wants to hear? We need some singers. We need some, just because Joe can hit some highs now doesn't mean we can cover all that, you know?
Yeah, it's only going to get us so far, honestly.
The Mutchums will take you the rest of the way.
And, you know, Blind Benny doesn't come out too much anymore these days.
Yeah, Blind Benny.
Blind Benny, he's a sultry, sultry man. But we got to keep him in the box because when Blind Benny comes out, there's about 4 days of things I got to pay for after Blind Benny comes out. So
yeah, let's save it for the desert. Yeah, that sounds good.
Save it for the desert. That's it.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh, well, well. Brad.
That was a good program.
Nice program. Nice guy. Great conversation. Do you think if you were out at the desert studio, say like, you know, in a certain time of your life, you think you would have, what journey would you have went on? Would you have been able to keep it together or you would have been too irresponsible?
At a certain time of my life, I would have gone on all the journeys.
Too many journeys. Would you have been to Mexico like after like 2 days?
Yeah.
Had one too many and jumped the wall.
So, you know, when the Goops made their record for Warner Brothers, we were still a real party band, and we knew that, and we lived in New York and we had to get out of New York. So we went upstate we essentially went to Woodstock, but it was Dreamland, which is an awesome studio.
Oh,
it's just south of Woodstock. So we kind of had that, and we did have a few nights of revelry. I celebrated a birthday up there. That
okay. What year?
Came back with a minivan covered in someone else's vomit, not mine.
Oh.
So
what,
there was
what year birthday was that?
It was my. Oh, I'm not going to say. I'm not going to date it.
Oh, you know, this is why I make fun of how old you are, because you play these games. This is why when I imagine you in high school, I just go straight to like Dazed and Confused. You know, I know that wasn't you. You're probably closer to what? Like,
when does that take place?
Dazed and Confused is the 70s. You're probably more, what's the Judge Reinhold, Cameron Crowe one? You're probably more that. Fast Times at Ridgemont High, was that more your high school experience?
I could definitely relate to that for sure.
Yeah, that one was you. Who were you in that movie? Were you?
I was Brad. Wasn't that the guy's name?
It was Brad. You were not that innocent guy. You were Damone. You were selling cheap trick tickets. You were like, daddy's all right. Mommy's, yeah, you were that guy. Oh, wait, that guy has sex with an underage girl in that movie. So,
yeah, that guy's.
I retract. You're Brad. You're nice, Brad. Wait, he also does. Oh, Jesus. I don't know. Anyway, moving on. New Menzinger's records. Nice.
Yes.
Good album.
I liked your take on it. That was interesting.
Thank you.
Kind of analyzed what was going on.
That was kind of astute, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I want to commend myself on one other thing. I forgot to talk about it in the interview when we went to the Italian thing. But I get, you know, basically I find out, I'm not going to tell you how, that the middle initial for Joe, and then I guess his name. I don't know. For permanent record's sake, I'm not going to say it because I don't know. I don't know. People are fucking weird.
Right.
And I guess his name. And he's like, you know, got to admit, that was pretty impressive. And I told him, I'm like, listen, anybody who's a native of Central New Jersey is an honorary Italian, you know? I know some things. I know some things. And you're not the first one of these I've met. Let's just say that, you know? So I think I got some brownie points. Maybe not enough to get my dual citizenship, but
this episode kind of reminded me of something that I was recently thinking of. I was reading a ridiculous article about, I mean, it wasn't ridiculous. It was an informative article about pet psychics, or which mm-hmm. are kind of like, they're more like pet psychiatrists, but they can like diagnose stuff and really, and they get paid a ton of money. And I have always kind of thought, and this really drove it home, that like, if you ever took the time to get your degree, you could definitely be like the musician's shrink. Like, you're very intuitive with, and obviously you've been there, but you're very intuitive with what is affecting people. And I think you'd make a great shrink for musicians.
Thanks, Brad.
On the couch with Benny.
I mean, listen, well, we got to throw away one thing first, because I've danced with this idea and I don't think it could ever happen. It's like the whole like going back to get a degree thing is like, yeah, it's not happening. So anybody who will choose me as their psychiatrist should know off bat that there's going to be no frame shit on the wall besides for, you know, whatever I have now, you know, my kids' pictures.
Oh, dude, my brother-in-law is going to this, I don't know what he is. He's a freaking physical therapist who has no degrees at all. Who's like the 49ers, like main guy who is the most desirable guy in California to fix. Who's like completely like worked magic on him. And the guy has no, they call him the doctor, but he has no doctor's degrees. He has no degrees at all.
See, oh, so you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. I'm saying you could
listen,
do it.
You know how much people are worth, right?
Yeah.
You're worth how much people are willing to pay, baby.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So if this insight is that astute, oh, Brad, you're stroking me too much here. I'm going to go into like some conversation with my wife soon, like just feeling a little too flighty from this conversation. And she's going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
don't go too soft on me. I did lump you in with the pet psychic, so.
That's okay. Pets are complex. Well, that's an appropriate off-track ending. Socials for Joe or what? Just
Joe Godino
on Instagram.
At Instagram and the Menzingers everywhere else.
And yeah, if you're in the Scranton area, check out Dino's Stone Quarry. Yeah. If you need some stone.
And go to all those restaurants.
Yeah, that was nice. Oh, it kind of made me hungry, actually.
I kind of want to check one of those out.
Yeah, nice Italian sandwich right now. Yeah. You know what I go for? I go for fresh mozzarella, roasted red peppers, you know, a little oil and that nice bread. Mm. Come on. Okay. All right. See you, Brad.
Benny, it's been real.
Love you. Have a great time. Have a great week, everyone.